Sorry.
Okay.
So are you unmuted from your computer now?
Yes. You guys hear us now?
We can't hear them.
What? And it didn't, she wasn't, I thought she would turn on her camera.
Is this what happened to y'all?
Don't know.
This seems to be the host here over here, that John.
The volume is off here. You want me to click volume?
That's going to cause our echo.
That's going to cause the echo.
So it should be,
I'll try not to touch it.
Yeah,
take those.
Blame for here.
Yeah, that's the.
Did I hear us before?
Yeah, she was speaking to us, but.
Yeah, she was speaking.
Who was speaking to us earlier?
I don't know if she was speaking to us. She was speaking to someone else.
Are you? I'm here. It, and we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Great.
Fantastic. Okay, we weren't sure. I'm sorry,
No,
Rebecca.
not at all. I just was off camera waiting for you. I didn't want to interfere with your regular business.
Okay. Well, we do start the meeting. I don't know if you heard me. I introduced myself. I'm Kristen Shara. I'm the chair of the Ulster County Environmental Management Council, and I initially emailed you. Thanks to Vicki Luperini, who gave us your contact information because of this leachate problem that's come up in some of our towns. I'm from Hurley, so this has been an issue with the Hurley landfill that they're working on. So I just wanted to say welcome to you and just let everyone know that we're the director of Rebecca Martin Consulting and a dedicated environmental and community advocate. You founded the KingstonCitizens.org and you've led important work at Riverkeeper and the Kingston Land Trust, just to name a few organizations. We asked you, and also being a nationally known singer and songwriter, which is pretty amazing. So we asked, as I said, we asked you to come and speak about the landfill leachate issue. So if you would like to go ahead.
Can you see that?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm also just a Kingston resident. So I live in Ulster County and I'm happy to be with CACs and ECCs and others. I'm familiar with many of you. So I can launch right in if you'd like.
Sure, please go
Okay.
ahead.
All right. So I'm happy to be here, as I said, with all of you, and to share a report called "The Leachate Loophole and the Threat of Landfill Leachate to Drinking Water in the Hudson and Mohawk Rivers and Beyond." As we're taking on statewide data right now, which we'll talk about in a little bit. My name's Rebecca Martin. I'm the project manager of this report, and I'm part of a larger team. We call ourselves the Hudson and Mohawk Rivers Leachate Collaborative. We do have a website, www.leachateloophole.org, and we'll talk a little bit about that in a bit. So our team, as you mentioned, I was at Riverkeeper for about 7 years, and I worked in water quality where I met and worked with Jen Epstein. And I was in water quality before transitioning to director of community partnerships, where with my team built a watershed-wide grassroots organizing platform just in the Hudson River watershed. And Jen maintained her work in water quality. And while we were there, Captain John Lipscomb, who is and was, he just retired, the vice president of advocacy and was our boat captain, had raised this problem of leachate and it being dumped into the Hudson River for as long as I knew, as for as long as I'd been there. And it was dumped into the Hudson. We use the term dumped. It actually was, it's leachate is delivered to sewage treatment plants, where it's not processed, and the majority of the chemicals in the leachate are transferred into the rivers, source waters. And so when I left Riverkeeper in 2023, so did Jen Epstein. Jen moved to Bolivia and then now lives in Africa, and we've been doing this remotely for the last 3 years. And this was the first project that we took on together. We wanted to investigate this problem, and we had the freedom now to do it. We were just recently joined by Maureen Cunningham. Some of you may know Maureen. She is the former executive director of the Hudson River Watershed Alliance and was the tr chief strategy officer and director for clean water at Environmental Advocates. And it's great to be working with someone like Maureen. She's also a town board member in the town of Bethlehem. She's been on their board for a long time. And so collectively, we have 50 years of experience working on the Hudson River. And PACE Environmental Litigation has come forward and has been doing our legal work for the short term, which is terrific. They work with a lot of groups, by the way, community groups that are needing support. And Good Work Institute is our fiscal sponsor. So we have elected not to become a 501c3 to allow for our team to do our work. And our report, just to cut to the chase, it was released in December of 2025, after several years of work, 2 years of work. We released it on the 50th anniversary of the Safe Drinking Water Act. And there's a lot going on. You can see at our website, but this QR code will take you directly to the report. And I will send you these slides. Actually, Misha has them, but I can resend them if to anyone who's interested. So as a collaboration, we were slow to become a coalition because we wanted to release the report and start building our partners. And so we've been transitioning into a coalition and building out organizations. And this is just a sampling of who is coming forward and working with us on all sorts of issues, sludge, et cetera, where there are intersections with leachate. We meet monthly, and every month we have a different expert that comes in that talks to us. We're doing work on the precautionary principle in the fall to learn more about that. We've been learning about rulemaking, which we'll talk about, so that we're prepared as a coalition of partners to respond to leachate and all of the options that are upcoming to work on the problem. So our project goal has been to raise awareness about landfill leachate and standard practice for many different industrial waste streams to flow into municipal sewage treatment plants. And raw leachate is one of these industrial waste streams. And the public is largely unaware. I think because we call sewage treatment plants wastewater treatment plants, there's the assumption that they are treating anything and everything that's delivered to it. And so we believe or assume that that stuff like landfill leachate is being properly processed. So prior to this project, this report, the scope and scale of this practice hadn't yet been summarized for the public. And so we want to empower communities to be able to better protect their drinking water supplies from leachate contamination. And our goal is to share this information so that communities, especially those in this case, in our mission area, that are using these rivers for drinking water supplies are aware, and they can use this information in order to protect their drinking water supplies. So what is leachate? We all know, but many people don't, and including, some of our water treatment operators who weren't really familiar with what leachate was. And so it's a liquid that's produced, and there's no shame in not knowing. We're always all learning, right? So I'll just start from the beginning of the definition here. And so when rain or snow melt percolates through a landfill and the water moves through a mass of garbage at a landfill, it picks up a variety of chemicals that are known and unknown. And that includes heavy metals, pesticides, and a wide range of synthetic chemicals like PFAS. So, since about 1970, the EPA has registered more than 86,000 chemicals for use in U.S. manufacturing and commerce, and many of them are petroleum-based additives that are used to make everyday goods and to make them more convenient. So, for most of these chemicals, we lack sufficient information to fully understand the risks that are associated with exposure to these chemicals through air, water, and soil, but in many cases, we know the risk is there. And I've moved here just to feature this image because it's difficult to imagine water that's more polluted than leachate or garbage water. And so, to us, and hopefully to many more of us, that leachate isn't just a word, it's an extremely harmful, toxic, polluting substance that should never be allowed to leave the landfill untreated. So, to begin, what we chose to do is we wanted to illustrate the systematic practice, bad practice, holistically. So we took a bite at the apple and began our work by focusing on the portions of the Hudson and Mohawk rivers. I have my cursor here. Can you hear me okay and see what I'm? Yep. Jim?
Those slides are not scrolling, I think.
Yeah, we're still on the first
Oh.
slide.
All right, hold on. Oh, that's a bummer. What about now?
Ah,
Yes.
yes.
That's
There
good.
you go. There you
You've
go.
just seen my face the whole time?
Yeah. Oh, no, we still
Well,
have the first slide.
all right. Well, what I'm just going to do quickly, and I see Jenny's got her hand raised. This is our team. This is the team slide. This is the QR code in our of our report that I mentioned. This is our community, our coalition of community partners. Can you see that?
Yes.
Yes.
These are our project goals that I spoke over. This is leachate. What is leachate? And this is the image that I wanted, that I landed on for quite a while. And this is our project area. So that brings us up to date. Jenny? Couldn't you just couldn't see. Okay, good.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm glad I asked. Please always jump in. If something like that happens again during this presentation. All right, so the project area. So what you see here is the Hudson River here in the Hudson River watershed, portion of it. That's the drinking watershed, as well as the Mohawk River. And we wanted to connect the problem to drinking water so that the public would care that this practice was occurring. But essentially, you can apply this problem anywhere in the state, anywhere across the nation, anywhere in the world. This is happening nationally, internationally. And so, to keep it small and simple and to illustrate the point, what we did is, as I said, we have our Mohawk River from Fulton and Montgomery counties to the edges of the counties, and then east to the Hudson and the Hudson River south from its confluence here, down through Ulster and Dutchess to the edge here. And our project includes also some areas that are not officially designated as drinking water sources by the state, but we included them because all the waters are connected. So these rivers provide drinking water. They're both rivers that are connected groundwaters and supply drinking water to nearly 369,000 people. About 259,000 people use them as their sole, their primary drinking water supply, and 109,000 people use them as part of a blended water supply. So, as I said, we chose to connect this bad practice to drinking water in order to show how the leachate loophole directly impacts people's health and the environment. And as I said, the project is not unique to our area. It's important to say because some people over the course of showing these, bringing these presentations to the public, believe that if they're not drinking from the Hudson and Mohawk, then they're not impacted, and that isn't the case. We'll talk some more about that in a bit. So the methodology of our reporting or creating our report for the project area, we set out to map the flows of landfill leachate into municipal sewage treatment plants in our area. And we collected data on leachate flows from municipalities through FOILs, Freedom of Information. And we also utilized information in landfill compliance reports. We compiled the data for the years 2019 to 2023. And we chose this time range because 2023 was the most current year with data that was available at the time that we began the work. And we went back to 2019 to give us a 5-year window. So, in addition to volumes, we track the fees that are collected by municipal sewer authorities and identify drinking water intakes that are downstream of the sewage treatment plants and the municipalities that they supply. So, the big picture takeaway is that on average, 89 million gallons of raw leachate are passed through municipal sewage treatment plants into the Hudson and Mohawk rivers. 58 million gallons of this go into the Hudson River. 31 million gallons go into the Mohawk River. And the vast majority of this leachate comes from active landfills at 78 million gallons. The remaining 11 million gallons come from inactive or closed landfills. So, what is the leachate loophole? So, modern landfills must take extensive measures to contain and collect leachate at the landfill in order to keep it out of neighboring groundwater and surface water. And the standard practice is for leachate then to be trucked or piped to any municipal sewage treatment plant that will take it. Many people have assumed that municipal sewage treatment plants are capable of treating leachate and that leachate is made safe by passing through sewage treatment plants, but we know that that's not true. Sewage treatment plants are designed to handle human waste. They are not equipped to remove toxic chemicals found in leachate. So, our team coined this phrase, the leachate loophole, in order to describe how toxic landfill leachate that is not allowed to be released directly from landfills, but is allowed to pass through sewage treatment plants and into rivers. The loophole shamefully enables the continual pollution of our waters. So, we're going to get into the regulatory gaps for a minute, which is really interesting. And I'm sure that you'll all appreciate this to show how the leachate loophole works. So, I'll get into some details now on the regulations. But you can see that there are multiple environmental regulations here that touch upon leachate at various locations in its life cycle, but they are all failing to protect rivers from the pollution of leachate. So, starting with RCRA, or the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act at the landfill. So this first piece of legislation is the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act. It was passed in 1976, and it was passed in response to America's growing volume of trash. It had become clear that leachate could seep out of unlined landfills and pollute nearby groundwater and surface water. So RCRA led to regulations that required landfills to control leachate by installing liners and collection pipes. So once leachate is collected and is un was under control, the question now was what to do with it. So the Clean Water Act at the landfill was passed in the Clean Water Act was passed in 1972 to reduce water pollution. And under the Clean Water Act, facilities that discharge wastewater into neighboring streams and rivers must obtain permits that limit and monitor the amount of pollution that the facility can release. And just like sewage treatment plants, if they intend to discharge, they're going to need a state pollutant discharge elimination system, these permit. So this is cumbersome. So if a landfill were to discharge the leachate directly into a water body, it would need a speedies permit from the state who issues these permits. The permit would require some treatment to remove chemicals from the leachate, as well as monitoring and reporting. Again, cumbersome. So let me go back. Nearly all landfills then send leachate to municipal sewage treatment plants in order to avoid a permit. Sewage treatment plants, however, are required to have speedies permits, but these permits do not cover the pollutants that RCRA prohibits landfills from releasing. So they're not in concert there. Sewage treatment plants are designed and equipped, as we said earlier, to treat human waste. So their speedies permits focus on indicators of biological human waste. They are not equipped to remove or break down the types of synthetic chemicals that are found in landfills, nor are they required to do so. So the solution to pollution is dilution, does not work here at all. So the Clean Water Act at the sewage treatment plant. So the burden of treating this water and ensuring that it falls to that's safe falls to drinking water treatment plants under the Safe Drinking Water Act. I'm out of sequence. Pardon me. All right. So going backwards to the sewage treatment plant. And I think I've just covered this. I'm sorry. I did. So I'm moving to the Safe Drinking Water Act. That's what I meant. So as I was saying, that the burden of treating this water is going to fall now on the drinking water plants under the Safe Drinking Water Act. And this law was passed in 1974, in order to protect public health, and it requires drinking water suppliers to meet concentration limits for just over 90 contaminants. And the act itself doesn't prohibit sewage treatment plants from discharging untreated leachate into drinking water sources. The Safe Drinking Water Act places the burden of removing chemicals on drinking water treatment plants, which are often operated also by municipalities. And in most cases, the drinking water plant operators are unaware that sewage treatment plants are accepting and discharging landfill leachate upstream or nearby. So while we were working on this project, Captain John Lipscomb said this, and I use it in our presentation because I think it's so strong, which is industrial waste is not gone from our rivers. It's just hidden. And people often say that, well, and as I was saying earlier, leachate is only one stream of this. There's all sorts of industrial wastewater that's coming to our municipal sewage treatment plants. And, so we have this system that requires landfills to prevent the release of landfill leachate into neighboring waters, but that also allows this shameful practice of dispersing this pollution back into the environment, and then requires communities who use rivers for drinking water to bear the costs. So the burden and the worry to make in order to make the water safe to drink, most of the time they're environmental or justice communities or disadvantaged communities in our mission area that are drinking from rivers or relying on these waters. So we have regulations that are designed to protect water at each step of the process, but the leachate loophole allows this illogical practice of leachate disposal at municipal sewage treatment plants. The system doesn't exist because it's the best way of doing things. It came into existence decades ago based on assumptions that polluting chemicals are safe at low concentrations and that they break down rapidly into the environment. But recent research and experience show that these assumptions are incorrect, and regulations for contaminants such as PFAS chemicals have not kept up. So we need new approaches to managing our garbage, and we need our agencies to stop looking at this problem in silos and instead take a holistic approach to finding solutions. So, as mentioned earlier, leachate disposal is not only a Hudson and Mohawk River problem, and this is where it starts to get really big, and we're just beginning this. I mean, if it wasn't big enough already, looking at statewide data for active landfills is kind of stunning. And looking at where these sewage treatment plants are also telling. So we believe that this is not only a statewide problem, but in fact a national crisis. And we don't say that lightly. And so as one of our next steps, we've begun to compile leachate disposal information across the state. And we have found that active landfills are discharging 671 million gallons of leachate into sewage treatment plants every year, and into drinking water supplies. And about 40% of this volume passes through sewage treatment plants into Class A streams, designated for drinking water, which was really surprising to us. Not anymore, but we're literally poisoning ourselves so that landfills can operate cheaply. So, just to give an overview, our work was designed to show the public and to support municipalities in understanding the leachate loophole. Solutions to this problem. We're sort of at the beginning of having to deal with this. And as you know, in Hurley and in the city of Kingston, they're currently in the throes of that. And so, but in our report, I'll share this and we can talk about it some more if you'd like. So, one of the solutions is to treat leachate on site to remove the broadest range of contaminants before it's allowed to be discharged into surface waters. We advocate closing landfills which requires zero waste hierarchy strategies, increase municipal, county, state composting programs. I'd love to see that mandatory. Reduce single-use plastic waste. And we know that recently the Packaging Reduction, Recycling and Infrastructure Act did not pass through the assembly at the last hour. And but we have to continue to push for for bills like PREA, that's the acronym if you didn't know, to move through the state to apply the precautionary principle to chemical approval. So as it stands, the burden of proof for any chemicals that are created are literally placed on the public once they're sick, and then have to prove that the chemical that they've been consuming, like PFAS in the city of Newburgh and their drinking water into Washington Lake for over 2 decades, is causing harm, rather than making sure that the company that's creating these chemicals are testing them properly to make sure that those chemicals are safe before being released into the environment. This is a heavy lift. There's actually procurement policies, things you can do locally to start promoting the kinds of products that you're purchasing, to start building awareness of this problem, and to stop creating toxic chemicals altogether. So what's next? When we started this project, we started it a couple of months before the DEC actually announced as a separate action. It just was fortuitous. The DEC announced a rulemaking for, their words, not ours, on-site treatment and disposal of leachate at landfills. But their consideration did not materialize that year. It didn't materialize in 2024, and each year they've announced it in their agenda items in January, and it has not come forward. Additionally, in 2023, when we learned about the rulemaking, the state held a stakeholder meeting, but with only landfill operators, to provide input, leaving out sewage and drinking water plant operators. So now that the harm is caused by this practice and is undeniable, we can't afford further delays. And so what we've done is we've created a simple action for the public to take, the municipalities can take, many have, to urge the DEC to open the rulemaking. Until they do, we will not be able to see what their proposed regulation is for on-site treatment and disposal of leachate at landfills. When the rulemaking opens and we see their regulation, we're asking for a 90-day public comment period in order to do as much work as we can to get the public engaged. And we have a good head start. We've been working on the ground for about 6 months. We're a small group, so we're doing the best we can. We're here tonight. We present wherever we're asked to help to share the problem of the leachate loophole. I actually took the liberty to create a sample municipal resolution for Ulster County municipalities, so that it's not just a letter, it's an actual resolution, so you could bring that back to your communities. It's a very simple ask. You're just asking the state to open the rulemaking. It's a good opportunity to talk about the problem, to become educated on the problem within your municipality, and to work together, to work with us in order to make sure that whatever is in place going forward is, not some sort of engineering scam that kicks the can down the road. We really just can't afford to do that any longer. And so that is my presentation tonight. I appreciate you inviting me and listening. This is another QR code that's our issue brief. It's a one pager of everything that we discussed tonight. All of these materials are on our website at leachateloophole.org. And we also have a blog, We report on all kinds of things and we continue forward. And we're looking forward to continue to work to protect not only the rivers in our mission area, but to expand our work statewide, to work to protect rivers statewide, which is appropriate with this leachate loophole problem. Thank you. So I'll stop sharing. That was a lot. Happy to answer any questions.
Rebecca.
Yeah. Do we have any questions online on Zoom?
Yes.
Okay, maybe let's go to that first.
Amanda and Jennifer both have their hands raised.
Okay.
Thank you. Rebecca, please remind me where things stand with the County Environmental Committee and whether or not Ulster County is moving forward with a countywide initiative. I hear the value of doing this municipality by municipality because the sewage treatment plants are typically local municipalities running them or farming them out and paying for a contractor to run them. But my brains are scrambled from just coming out of a primary, and I just don't recall where things stand at the county level.
Okay. So thank you, Manna, and thank you for all of your work during this primary election. I know it was a lot of work for you, and we all appreciate your service. So both Ulster County's legislature and county executive have actually sent letters to the state asking them to open the rulemaking. The DEC to open the rulemaking. Their letters are on our website. But as it pertains to treatment of leachate, I am not sure where things stand in terms of the conversations that are being had with Mark Ryder and the Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency Authority. But I think that we know that within our county, we have a couple of Superfund sites, but the truth is leachate is polluted. Whether it's more polluted or less polluted, it's polluted. So a Superfund site is bad, but it's all bad. Just so Hurley doesn't feel so bad, and Saugerties also has a Superfund site, and they're delivering that leachate to Glasgow that goes into the Hudson just above Hyde Park and Rhinebeck's drinking water intakes. But Hurley's leachate problem and where to bring it, they were bringing it to the city of Kingston, who stopped accepting it, which created a real challenge, unfortunate challenge for Hurley. And we were encouraging Hurley to go to the state and bringing the state into this because they need to get involved and frankly take ownership of this problem. That's really theirs, and to solve with all of us, but to not turn away. And there have been some engineering. There was StreamGo, which is an engineering or a company that claims that they're removing all PFAS from the leachate. I don't think that that's possible, actually, to remove all leachate from leachate and then to destroy it. Based on educational work we've been doing with Just Zero, and we have a video of that. That was, we learned more about these new technologies and these new companies that are promising to remove and destroy leachate, PFAS. But what I do believe that I'm not sure what the outcome of the testing was. I'd like to know, but we don't know. But I think Kingston has resumed accepting leachate again from Hurley, because otherwise it would have ended up in the Passaic River. Essentially, whoever will take it is where municipalities deliver it to. And it's so inexpensive. It's pennies per gallon is essentially what landfills are paying. And it's not small for small municipalities. And it's a real problem for municipalities who own landfills. And so I don't know, but it would be a good conversation to have with UCRA. That's the long and short of what I know, and to bring them in to talk to them about it.
I would very much like to be part of that conversation and keep track of what we can do at a countywide level. And, you know, maybe somebody from Department of Environment as well, or, you know, Amanda, whoever sees it. But whatever the next steps are, I now have the bandwidth to participate. And, you know, seeing that the UCRRA becomes a model for sound solid waste management, whether it's toxicity or, you know, all of the other aspects, is something I will work on in or out of the legislature, because I spent 10 years there and really care and want to be sure that they are a model. So I've offered them to help, and I'm offering, if there's any way I can help, please reach out to me. I actually have the mental space to participate now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mina. And I'll say this, that, when we think about what we want to do within the county or the state, however we're thinking about this, we've been setting a goal of making leachate potable water, that it shouldn't be dispersed into the environment at all, unless it's drinking water quality, because it's unfair that the pollution from a landfill is then, just essentially delivered someplace else for someone else to have to deal with those poisons. So potable water is the goal. How do we get there? And that sounds like a lofty goal, but I think we have to set some lofty goals when it comes to chemicals that are being dispersed and spread throughout the environment. And I think that the polluters should pay.
And I also, well, I do believe that Ulster County needs to site a countywide landfill, but that it needs to include all of the protective measures, maximum waste diversion, hazardous waste management, et cetera. And we can do that, and we can become a model. But it takes facing it, and I want to help people to do that. There's also, I think it's important, if you haven't already, the Association of Town Supervisors and Mayors.
Thanks, Mina.
Okay, thank you, Rebecca. I'm afraid we're gonna have to leave it there because we are over time on this segment. So I would ask, would it be okay if anyone has questions for Rebecca, could they email you, Rebecca? Would that be all right?
Course, yeah. Of course, or call. I mean, I actually prefer phone calls than emails. I get hundreds of them. And especially locally, I'm happy to talk to any of my communities here.
Okay, so we could send out Rebecca's contact information with the minutes,
Yeah.
and if people want to contact you.
Sounds good. My
Okay.
phone number is here in the chat, and
Okay.
yeah, I hope this was helpful.
That was excellent. Well,
Unfortunately, before we leave this, I have one question that I think we need to add to the concept, and that question being, how do we clean this up? When you talk about the list of 86,000 different chemicals that are registered with EPA in manufacturing, and we accept that those may be in leachate, what chemical methodology exists, and you keep talking about PFOAs, to remove all of these chemicals so that you say you want to take leachate to drinking water quality, I'd hope better, but the chemical plant to do that level of conversion and separation of all of those chemicals from drinking water, I have no concept of what that takes.
Yeah. What is your name and what community are you from?
I'm Bill Moore and I live in Kingston.
Hi, Bill.
And I've been a RCRA inspector for 30 years before I retired 7 years ago.
Great. So the simple answer is that there isn't any technology that does that. You could use reverse osmosis and you could remove a lot. You could start there. You could start with a reverse osmosis, which I know is expensive, but again, polluter pays. And that would at least remove, I mean, the problem is, you know, what are you trying to remove? What are you monitoring? What are you looking for? You know, this becomes a really, it's a tricky question, but in the short term, there is that. We are seeing reverse osmosis being used in communities. There is then a concentrate.
I'm 86 million gallons?
Yeah.
Well, it's not, it depends. It depends. And, you know, there are plenty of folks that I could connect you to that are engineers that could talk to you in more detail. But what I would say to you is that until the DEC opens this rulemaking, because we want them to work to find a solution along with us, we need people's eyes on what they're proposing for on-site treatment and disposal of leachate. And unless the public is asking for that to be released, then it's probably going to take many, many years for them to do so while this practice persists. So we got to start somewhere. And the somewhere is getting our hands on what the state proposes. Is a what does on-site treatment and disposal mean, right? So we don't need to sit around and think about ourselves, how do we do this? We need the state to open it so that we have 90 days to work with engineers and lawyers and the public and wastewater treatment operators and drinking water operators and, you know, everybody's eyes on what the state proposes to make a good to make a good law, and then to make sure it's funded. Right now, we're at the start of a very massive problem, and the only way to begin is to start here. The good news is that we're talking about it in a way that we can understand the problem right now, and that's where good things begin, right? But as, and I think Nana said it, you've got to start by acknowledging that there's a problem. So I'm with you. I think we should all be demanding that polluted water should not just be dispersed out into the environment. You know, if a landfill, I mean, a lot of these landfills that are private, they make a lot of money on garbage. And they're not paying, you know, in some cases, they're not paying anything. I mean, in situations where landfills, you know, that are private or privately managed, like further south, and delivering this to municipal sewage treatment plants, they're paying zero. So it's a practice to look into. I'd love to talk to you more, but I would say that we need to get the state to open this rulemaking. We need to see what they propose, and then we need to work together with all kinds of experts around the table to try to make make some progress here is what I would say. And I would encourage you to please look at the resolution that I've made for you. Bring it into your community and talk about it. We shouldn't be afraid of it. It's happening everywhere. It's a problem that's international. And this project is, I mean, I've been fielding calls from states, all across the country who are dealing with this problem, and have different laws than we do, but are approaching it. Anyway, that's a long answer. I appreciate the extra time. I know you've got to go, and I hope that that helps you, helps to answer your question.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank
Thank you so
you.
much, Rebecca.
Yep, no, but no problem. Have a good night, everyone.
Hey, good night. Okay, moving on. So let's move to the Department of the Environment announcements. Sorry, I was just deep in thought about it.
Yes, I know.
It's really hard to come back. Yeah.
Sorry about that.
No, that's all right. Well, our internal announcement, our colleague Michelle is starting again, and she's not going to necessarily be the point person for organizing this meeting for a while because she'll be part-time as she comes back in. But she will be the point person for the NYSAC conference specifically. So if you have any questions related to that, you can start circling those back to Michelle. And you know, we have any other open lines of communication with her, she'll be sort of slowly resuming contact. But for most DNC related things, you can still reach out to Misha or myself. We're still waiting on just finalizing, but it looks like the watersheds coordinator position will be housed in the Department of Environment after all. There's, you know, some internal stuff working out there, so I'll keep you updated as to when we actually post for the position. But it had been maybe going to be at Soil and Water, but now it's not going to be hosted at Soil and Water. It's going to be hosted here with us. We're working on the consolidated funding application right now for two programs. They're both programs that we applied to last year and unfortunately did not get last year, but we're hoping that since we are editing them based on what we found out last year, that we will get them. One is the $400,000 M4 grant that Misha is spearheading the effort on, the M4 coordinator. And the other is about organics diversion. So it's actually being written up by OCRA. And that being submitted through our department. So, you know, speaking to some of these ideas about the hierarchy of composting and increasing the capacity for composting throughout the county and improving some of those ways, those are all being written into the grant, which will be submitted next month. And then we'll let you know if we end up receiving that grant as well. I'm trying to think what else is of interest to all of you. I'm gonna leave it there right now. I think there was one other thing, but I'll call back in if I remember what it was.
Okay. Thank you. Could we turn on some lights?
Oh yeah.
Oh,
that's behind you, Misha, behind that screen.
Thank
The chat in there is somebody trying to talk with.
I don't know.
I'm asking.
Yeah, so she just has to step away from what we're seeing. What else?
Okay.
So, Vicky Luperini attended the Energy, Environment, and Sustainability Committee meeting on June 3rd, and so she forwarded me her notes since she wasn't able to go to come tonight. So their first topic was the UPRA report. The UPRA has put an indefinite hold on siting a landfill in Ulster County. They're looking to implement waste diversion where the goals are to reach 30% diversions by 2030. 60% by 2040 and 90% by 2050. This follows the state management plan. Still looking to implement the Reuse Innovation Center with a building as a hub. Instead of buying a building at this time, they are thinking of leasing. Legislator Nolan asked a question, what is the timeline of siting landfill in Ulster County? Director Ryder answered the question by starting out telling us that Seneca Meadows would be closing in 2040 or in 15 years. And the capacity for New York to accept its own waste is going down. So the price of getting rid of Ulster County garbage will get more expensive going forward. New York is the largest exporter of waste in the country, and we have the most incinerators. It will take 10 years to get permits for and build a landfill. So if the landfill will be in Ulster County, a site will need to be found within 5 years. Department of the Environment, Assistant Deputy Executive Amanda Laval reported for the department. They are still in the process of searching for a director for the department. We already mentioned the MS4 grant. They also received $25,000 from the county toward offering grants to events who are interested to do the zero waste program. During that discussion, there was a discussion on the county food waste law or composting law that passed approximately 40 years ago. This discussion was who would do the education enforcement of this law, health department and or UGRA. Right now, neither has the staff. Once the county law and state law match in the amount of tonnage produced by an establishment, then the state department of agriculture will enforce the law. Right now, Ulster County food waste law requires any establishment that produces a half ton or more of food waste is required to divert, whereas the state law requirement is 2 tons. The state law is expected to come down to a half a ton in 2028. There is now funding to complete the zero waste implementation plan, which was started 6 years ago. And then the resolutions that were brought up, resolution 470 to ban the use of thermoform plastic as takeout containers by restaurants in Ulster County was postponed for another month for education awareness before a public hearing is set. Number 178, setting a public hearing on providing for the protection and restoration of the Esopus, Roundup Creeks, and Wallpill River, and providing the rights of the residents to Ulster County with clean water and healthy and productive ecosystems was postponed. Resolution 209, entering into a service agreement with UGRA was postponed. Number 273, opposing outside of landfill in Ulster County was postponed by the sponsor, Legislator Collins, for revising the resolution. And number 274, the project of building a rail trail from High Mount to Pine Hill is being reclassified under SEAKER as a type 1 action. And a revised environmental assessment form was being submitted because of historical findings. And I can also send you the digital of this copy of that, so for inclusion in minutes. So, okay. So. One piece of business that I would like to talk about before we go to the roundtable is this question. Normally, we haven't had an EMC meeting usually it's in July, I believe, that we skipped. And then the August meeting the last couple of years has been the Ulster County roundtable. So we basically kind of skipped to months in a way of having our meetings, which is convenient because we don't have access to the SUNY campus during the summer. And the alternative would be meeting here, I think. So the question is, do we want to
meet in July and skip August? Do we want to skip July, meet in August? I kind of was hoping Emily or some of the people working on ISAC were here, because I was wondering if they might want to use maybe the August meeting to focus on organization for the conference, or that would be worthwhile for them. I don't know. So what to the people, few people who are here and online, what do you think? Do we want to skip? Maybe it makes sense to skip July anyway, and plan on having our meeting in August instead.
I think that would be best.
Yeah, more people might be back from vacation by then too, perhaps.
Okay.
For the August meeting.
Yeah. Are there any responses online?
Yeah.
I mean, Rebecca.
She said she sent away and then
Yeah. Well, is that skip July and meet August? Yeah, I think it is. Which I already had a speaker lined up for July, so.
Wow.
Sure, it's fine. We'll reschedule him.
Do we need a different meeting place?
Well, we'll have to agree either to meet here or find another place.
Two and a half miles down the road, back to the Sulphur's Town Hall, and see if that's up there.
Well, it's also fine to meet here, similar to today.
Mm-hmm.
The limitation is general, it's not quite as big of a space, but even in August, you might not have your full room.
Yeah.
So it might be fine. It's fine to have it here if that's what you'd like to do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, will you folks be able to support us, you know, in a meeting, you know, in August, you know, with the owl and everything?
I think we currently are organized in a way. We'll just have, I think the easiest thing would be for it to follow the same pattern of being the last one, or whatever the last.
It's the last.
Okay, so the last Wednesday in August then. So if I think following the pattern will make it easier for us to make sure we have the owl and everything else. That would be fine.
Yeah. August 27th.
Yeah. So Misha, we'll figure that out and then cancel the July one and all of that.
Yeah, we can have the speaker who's going to be for July come to the August.
We'll ask him. Yeah, we can do that. Okay. Okay. All right, that sounds like I think that's a good decision. I support that. And Anna, I was wondering if Anna wanted to say anything about that she wanted to pass along about Cornell, what is going on there, or to the EMC.
I don't have any big updates with the summer coming up, so nothing big to report.
I appreciate the email that you sent to was that to Climate Smart people only about the heat emergency toolkit that was available, given that we're in just experienced a heat emergency this week.
Any community we've worked with on the disaster preparedness, we've sent that toolkit, but it often gets forgotten about. So it's just a Google folder with like lots of graphics that we've assembled from, we didn't create them. They're just, you know, from around the internet, and we've put them in one place. So when we have like a heat wave, it's an easy place to grab stuff. I don't know if every town posted graphics, but they were there and I figured I'd send them out. So hopefully they were useful.
Yeah. Thank you. Okay, well, I guess we can move on to our roundabout. So, Mark, would you like to start with the service?
Tomorrow night, we hope to have 7 out of 9 members to join the team. Hopefully, we had 4 charging stations approved. However, the company that's doing this, no, it's DVM, is looking to do a presentation about battery storage units. And I noticed we are, so we'll see what happens with
that. Is that the large scale ones or the residential?
Large.
Okay.
I don't think we have anything in our town code that would restrict it.
Mm-hmm.
So when we say large, are we talking to
not like what we would do out at the Coleman Graceman.
Okay.
We had our last repair cafe in May, our next one is coming up in July 26th. And we have our Carrots ranking survey going to be done next Tuesday, July 1st. That's where because Scenic Crossing had donated the land of the town, that there's this rare plant that has to be monitored yearly, and that was put on the environmental board. So every year we have to do it.
And I'm sorry, I missed the name of the plant.
Carrots, C-A-R-E-X. Frankie, F-R-A-N-K-I-I, also known as Frank's Sedge, S-E-P-G-E. And we're always fighting with the Central Hudson mower who mows the right of way. We're supposed to do this survey between the middle of July and the middle of September. Every time they go out there, they've already mowed the right of way, and we have to struggle to find the place.
And have you sent a report to anybody to ask for enforcement?
Oh, yes. Not only to Central Hudson, but to our town board.
And DEC, yes. Because if it's an endangered plant,
they won't identify who's doing it.
It doesn't matter if it's under their property guidelines, it's still an illegal activity.
Yeah.
So ask for an NCON officer to be notified.
Yeah.
At least trespass, if nothing else.
Yeah, actually, we've got a camera at the entrance.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's it.
Before we go on with the towns, I was remiss if Manajo, are you still there? Would you like to give us an update on the Climate Smart Committee, Ulster County Climate Smart Committee? Do you have any updates? Is Manna Joe still there?
No.
No. Okay. Sorry. Okay. Socrates, you have updates for us.
Yes. My notes here. I'm learning language from my environment. I'm just following up on what Leslie said last July. The town Socrates on Winston Farms. The town Socrates is looking to establish a planned development district. But a mostly undeveloped 840 acres of Winston farm property. Since the CAC is an interested party in the CEPR process, now at the DGEIS stage, I need an alphabet dictionary for all the acronyms. We're preparing comments regarding how to define open space, how to preserve it, and forested lands, and protect the water supply, wetlands, and streams, etc. The first public hearing is Wednesday, July 16th. So if anybody has insights or has dealt with a project that massive or large, you know, please share your knowledge or directions to go. Mm-hmm. So that's the July 16th, the first one. I think the second one is in August, but I don't have that date. Referenced in the minutes last month, it needs to be corrected. It was called something else, but it's actually the Community Climate Action Plan. And I think it was called...
Is that in the subject?
In the roundabout?
Yeah.
From last month?
The Climate Change Action Plan.
It's really technically the Community Climate Action Plan. So I want to correct that. And that draft has been reviewed by the CAC. It's ready to be submitted for community feedback, then to the town board for approval. And as I mentioned to Evelyn, we're just waiting for that one detail. So
you did send it?
I did send it.
Okay.
So I just sent it again to her and
okay.
to you.
Okay. Linda, right? Yeah. I'll talk to Mary O'Donovan and see, make sure that she's got that.
Yeah.
So once we have that inventory on residential natural gas emissions, then it should be ready for the next day for awards. And then we also have a repair cafe on Saturday, June 7th, Senior Center. 67 guests. We had 18 volunteer repair coaches. And we filled the hall, which is great. We fixed 80 items, unable to fix 20, still a good record. We're very well received, and our next one is October 4th, Saturday, October 4th. That's it, we saw it. Thank you.
Okay, Jim Easley for the town of Rochester. We have the third Thursday environmental series in cooperation with Rosendale Marble Town, Olive Gardener. We had a great presentation, and I recommend going to the YouTube channel. Again, that's for the third Thursday environmental series. You can see a recording of our June 19th presentation. It was titled Creating a Sustainable High School. There's a student in 2022 who was attending high school. He's now on to college. It's Siddhartha Lama. He gave a great presentation about trying to recycle more materials in their cafeteria. We're still, our town is still working on the community preservation plan. And our town is also working with the state legislature to possibly have a community housing fund established in our town. First, we need approval from the state legislature to do that. So that's ongoing. And coming up on Saturday, we're going to have our annual tire brigade, where we take canoes, boats, and kayaks down the Rondell Creek from a certain section from downstream of the hamlet of Kerhonson toward where the bridge goes over, the high bridge on 209, and we collect the old tires. Last year, we collected about 40 or 50 of them, and there seem to be many more.
What creek is that?
That's the Rondell.
Oh, the Rondell, okay.
Rondell. That's what we're doing.
Okay. Oh, Roberta's back? Okay. Well, let's, Bill, do you want to go and then we can have Roberta?
Yeah, Roberta, I'm still running.
Okay. Go ahead, Roberta.
Hi. Unfortunately, I don't have a lot to report. I had to go to the Yankee game. They lost. Several people didn't go to the June meeting, so we scheduled for July. There's a couple big developments being proposed. It's 200 something houses over towards Modena and Route 32, and they have some wetlands and that thing. And then there's another one down by the old landfill. They've got about 75 acres, so they're proposing that as a conservation subdivision. We had like a no mow sign event. So we put those around, and people are not doing no mow. I don't think people seem to like it. It's kind of like recycling where nobody's doing it anymore.
Okay. That's from Gardner.
That's from Gardner.
Thank you, Roberta.
I'll let you off.
Bill?
I don't have anything directly. I have a pet peeve, and I'll bring it up here quick. If your local fire department closes a road to remove a tree, please remind them to take down the tape afterwards. I got on a road in Rosendale, had to turn around, saw the tree that got cut up, went down and took the closure note down. But it is very common for fire departments that they close roads or they direct people in the wrong direction on roads. It's not environmental, but it is a public service thing. And there was a horrific accident on 32 coming north out of Rosendale. They backed up 42 cars on my side before they let any cars pass. 35 cars came from the opposite direction. I think 10 at a time might be a better number, but then again, it's not environmental. Oh, and I wasn't here last month because I was at a memorial service next door. So you can take me off the minutes from last month.
Thanks. So I'll finish off with the town of Hurley. Just about we looked into that and we did it. We encouraged our highway department on the rail trail to leave the parts that they mowed. I believe left for a year. We did that. But we also kind of did some research, and there was some pushback from, you know, not just the landscapers, but other, you know, there was some pushback about why that may not work very well. Or achieve the goals that it was trying to achieve. I think what we ended up with was mow high until July instead of no mow May. So as Rebecca was mentioning, there was a pilot program done by StreamGo at the town of Hurley landfill, collecting the leachate there and using their chemical processes to eliminate the PFAS out of the leachate. Yeah. And I have not heard, they said that it was reduced, but I haven't seen the actual report or the actual numbers. So which I am going to ask for that.
Do you know what process that was that they were using?
They said they use some, it's like this nano bubble technology.
It's not reverse osmosis?
No. That somehow separates out. And this was specifically focused on PFAS, I believe. So I don't know if any of these other chemicals were addressed by this program. From what I understand of the whole issue, when the leachate from the town of Hurley was delivered to the Kingston wastewater treatment plant, it was the PFAS level that was too high. So that's why it was refused for a couple of months. And so supposedly this would bring the PFAS level down, but then, you know, there's all these other chemicals that we would still be putting into the.
Do you have any identified industrial users of PFAS?
No, I think it's just coming from the garbage in the landfill that's as it decays, I guess is my guess. And, you know, from water filtering through.
Well, nothing should be percolating through your landfill from the top because it's got a cover.
Yeah.
So it's got to be the infill from the side or up from the bottom.
Yeah.
To produce leachate.
Mm-hmm.
So PFABs were never identified until a short time ago in Hudson Falls as a material of question. It's now a legacy material. So we don't know of all of the possible sources of it, but they hear that it was high enough for them to get concerned about. Raises the question of where did it come from, that it's high enough, and why is it showing up in your leachate?
Mm-hmm.
I
don't have a good answer for that.
The other side, and not to take anything from the presentation, because I'm aware of that difficulty. I worked at a sewage treatment plant. It can be very ugly. But all industrial waste generators are required to be able to look at the waste they generate as waste. And there's characteristic waste, and then there's listed waste. And all sewage treatment plants, and I don't know where leachate fits in this, are required to have a sewer use ordinance as to what you can put down the drain. And many industrial sites and many sewage treatment plants don't have any idea what limitations they have on their intake. Now, it's gotten better, but it's still got a long ways to go.
Mm-hmm.
The one that I'm particularly aware of is photographic chemicals that are based on silver. Every high school that has a journalism club or a yearbook club take pictures. Some of them develop their own pictures. And if it's black and white, and I don't know about color because my education isn't that new, but all black and white has silver in waste coming from that process. And all the high schools that get inspected get told that they can't dump it down the drain unless their sewer plant says they're allowed to at the level that they're dumping it down the drain. And none of them had any clue. And then when they ask the sewage treatment plant in most places, most of them don't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I know of six that do not have a clue because I wrote them up for it. But it's just a part of rules do exist that nobody's looking at. I spent 30 years of looking for things. I got questioned a lot about why do I care about that small amount of material? And to tell you the truth, the silver is a great antiseptic. Silver, active silver compounds. So you put it in a sewage treatment plant, it screws up the bacteriological kill that you're trying to achieve because the silver is trying to do it in another way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's why I asked the question about how you're going to get all those chemicals out. They indicated, you know, 87,000 different chemicals that are presently used. And I was not thinking reverse osmosis, but chemical removal into parts per million or parts per trillion in some has to be really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And you're now going to have this major chemical plant next to every landfill that ever existed. I think it's a good idea, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, do I trust the people running the chemical plant?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I wonder if it's just going to end up in casks of stored stuff because they won't be able to clean it up.
Well, and
like nuclear waste. I'm just going to say add to our nuclear waste right there.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
And nuclear waste is a whole other category.
Oh, yeah.
I've been to NG Point, I've had that fun too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. The only other thing I wanted to mention was that we recently got an email from Kristen Wilson, who is a, she's in the Ulster County Planning Department, telling us that asking for grant submissions from towns in the lower Esopus watershed to implement the actions that were listed in the lower Esopus implementation plan. Each, they came out with a report, and each town in lower Esopus, they had recommendations of things that they could do to improve the water quality of the lower Esopus, and there were other things as well, access to the Esopus for recreation. And in Hurley's case, they had, what I saw was they were saying repairing the riparian buffers along the Esopus. There was work needed there, improve the flow. So there's a certain point where it's gotten kind of filled with sort of silt and gravel, and it's not flowing as well as it could, and also invasive species reduction. So this just came out the other day, so I haven't come up with a plan or response yet. So what we're looking at, it seems like it might be the kind of thing that maybe we could team up with some of the other towns in that area of the flats. You know, Marbletown and Town of Ulster also have these same tasks. Maybe that's something we could work together on. And that's all I have for the town of Hurley. So I think that's everything for tonight's meeting. And we don't need to vote to adjourn because
we don't have a quorum.
But the next meeting will be August 27th, 6:30, and we're probably here, I guess.
Yeah, unless someone decides they want to host it somewhere else, we'll just assume
here. Okay. All right. Thank you. All right. Thank you, everybody. And thank you, Roberta. I think she might be the last one in line.
Thank you.
Okay.